I'm Ken Bastida.
And I'm Elizabeth Cook, and this is your Picks Now update. Today, with a fresh injection of funding, Cal Fire lit its first prescribed burn in Sonoma County this year. SkyDrone 5 flew over the controlled burn at Salt Point State Park today, and this is only the beginning. More burns are coming to the county next week. Today, Wilson Walker sat down with the head of Cal Fire, and he started by asking about the president's latest comments.
There's no reason for forest fires like that in California, but it's costing our country hundreds of billions of dollars because of incompetence in California.
Well, certainly when I heard them, they're puzzling, but just to be frank, they're uninformed and they couldn't be further from the truth. There is so much going on in California.
Cal Fire Chief Ken Pimlott responding to President Trump's repeated suggestions that California's deadly wildfires are effectively California's own fault. And as for the claim that the state is not managing its forest land,
$1 billion over the next 5 years is being appropriated for a direct engagement of projects on the ground. And looking at California, over half of the forest land in California is in federal ownership, our national forests. When we're talking about the landscape, it's as much, if not more, of a federal responsibility as it is the state and private.
What kind of threat is out there right now?
The threats throughout California, it's significant. You know, we still haven't recovered from 5 years of drought. The vegetation is critically dry. Yes, it's true, our forests, whether they're private or public, are what we call overstocked. They're thick, and it's from, you know, we've been excluding fire for so many years because we're protecting public and infrastructure. We've got, again, critical conditions that are stressing the trees. 129 million dead trees in the central and southern Sierra due to bark beetle infestation. So our forests from Siskiyou County to San Diego are critically dry, and we are still at the peak of that. There has been no significant precipitation in the state to take us out of fire season, and that includes the most northern portions of the state all the way to the south.
Now, the chief and I also talked a little bit about this season, how Cal Fire has been able to bounce back a little bit after getting overwhelmed by major fires in late July, and we did talk a little more about the president. You know, we have seen Mr. Trump very much involved in hurricane aftermath on the ground, personally talking with the emergency management teams there. I asked the chief if he or Cal Fire have ever been contacted by the president himself. His answer to that question and the entirety of our interview, you can find it online at kpix.com.
Yeah, and I think he makes the point very well that over half of this land we're talking about is owned by the federal government. That's U.S. Forest Service land, and that's controlled by the president, not by the state of California.
Correct.
Thanks, Wilson.
Meanwhile, President Trump has signed an order to cut red tape for California's water projects to make it easier to hydrate the Central Valley. The president ordered the government to streamline federal approvals for water projects. This new order covers California, Oregon, and Washington. President Trump said that this will speed up California's Central Valley and state water projects.
We're also speaking to the EPA, and they're all ready to go. As soon as I sign this, they're ready to go. So the big problem was the federal approvals. They were ungettable, and now they're very gettable. We're going to have them in very fast time because of the gentleman standing behind me.
Five Republican congressmen attended the ceremony, and several of them are facing tough re-election battles in Central Valley districts.
North Bay officials have settled a price gouging case in Sonoma County in the wake of last year's wine country fires. The Sonoma County DA's office says a Novato-based property management company has been ordered to pay $50,000 in civil penalties. Investigators found that the company increased the rents of 12 tenants who lived in condos in Santa Rosa and Rohnert Park. That increase was in direct violation of the price gouging restrictions during Governor Jerry Brown's declaration of an emergency.
The Diocese of San Jose now says it was wrong to allow several priests convicted of sex abuse to continue working. And today we spotted one of those men sitting in his garage in Sunnyvale. He is among three who were allowed to return to the clergy. The diocese has now released the names of 15 priests who were credibly accused, and six of them are listed here are still alive. The alleged incident spanned decades, beginning in the 1970s. KPIX5's Devin Feely with a look at why the diocese allowed some offenders to return. Devin?
Yeah, the challenge with the church sex abuse scandal has often been that some of these allegations were made years, sometimes even decades, after they first occurred, sometimes even after the offending priest had already died. But as we dug into those files, we found at least three examples of priests who had been accused, tried, convicted, sent to jail, and within a matter of years, allowed back into the church and sometimes into positions of authority.
Former Catholic priest Robert Gray, seen here sitting in the driveway of a home in Sunnyvale, pled no contest in 1993 to sexually abusing a teenage boy while assigned to St. Justin's Church in Santa Clara. He went to jail and to therapy and was eventually welcomed back into the church just 2 years later, where he served another 7 years before finally being forced out by a zero tolerance policy adopted in the wake of the church's sex abuse scandal in 2002.
Just because a priest wears the Roman collar and he's a priest and he commits a crime, that does not excuse that. There's no justification for that. Wrong is wrong.
The Diocese of San Jose released the names of 15 priests they say were credibly accused of sexual abuse. But the cases of Robert Gray, Hernan Toro, and Lionel Noah point to a troubling trend. All three men were convicted of abuse. Toro even had to register as a sex offender. But all three were eventually allowed back into the church as parish priests or in other jobs.
As a survivor, I think it's disgusting.
Survivors say the church's treatment of the three men fits a sad but familiar pattern.
It overwhelms you with how bad it was for all the victims and all the kids that could have been saved that weren't.
A spokesperson for the diocese says all three cases predate the current zero-tolerance policy for U.S. priests accused of abuse. In a prepared statement, the diocese wrote, "We now know, based on the current psychological best practices, that returning these men to ministry was a misguided attempt at rehabilitation, and the diocese has abolished the practice as a part of the zero-tolerance established by the Dallas Charter."
Now, survivors say that the 15 names that were released yesterday, they believe that is actually an undercount. There is currently an independent investigation that is going on into those very same files, and the diocese itself admits that that short list may still grow. In San Jose, Devin Feely, KPIX 5.
Two South Korean men involved in a black market scheme to uproot and sell succulents from the California coast are being kicked out of the country. They are called Dudliaz, and they are native to the Mendocino and Santa Cruz coastlines. Police say the men were scaling coastal bluffs to rip the plants out of the ground by the thousands, and then they would allegedly ship them to China and Korea to be sold on the black market for up to $50 a piece. Their scheme came crashing down after a tip from the post office.
There was a number of cases where just the sheer volume of shipping out of the post offices were starting to draw the attention of some of the people who worked at the post office, plus individuals who were literally standing in line and noticing something was odd.
Patrick Foy says dirt was often spilling out of the shipping boxes at the post office, like the ones seized during the bust. By the way, after the whole ordeal was shut down, Fish and Wildlife officers went back to the very same cliffs to replant thousands of those plants that were ripped out.
A new Stanford study found that a certain type of e-cigarette, popular among high schoolers, is more likely to hook users. The study found kids who use Juuls were more addicted than those who use other kinds of e-cigarettes, even though they didn't see it that way. Juul users were also attracted to the fruity, minty, non-tobacco flavors. Researchers say that teens are being exposed to e-cigarettes through social media and that underage kids make up 25% of Juul's Twitter followers. Researchers call it a public health concern.
Nicotine use during adolescence curbs brain development, and adolescents can become addicted to nicotine via electronic cigarettes, and research has shown that initiation with electronic cigarettes can lead to initiation in combustible cigarettes.
Juul says it is taking actions to prevent underage use. The company says it has aggressively worked with social media platforms to remove posts and accounts that portray the product as attractive to kids.
Now let's go back to 150 years ago, a time when there were probably more bears than people living in the East Bay, a time when the Hayward Fault was within 48 hours of snapping. unleashing a magnitude 6.8 quake on October 21st, 1868. We're approaching the 150th anniversary. Now, that was a magnitude 6.8, about the same size as Loma Prieta. When the Hayward Fault snaps the next time, and it is due, it will snap under the most urbanized fault in the history of the United States. In fact, the most urbanized fault in the world. The question is this: would it be just a magnitude 6.8, or is there a scenario whereby the Hayward Fault could trigger an even bigger quake? Here's David Schwartz.
One of the scenarios we think is very credible is that an earthquake actually starts in San Pablo Bay and ruptures in two different directions.
And how big a magnitude would that be if you had them both go at once?
7.2 to 7.3.
A 7.2 to 7.3. My question to you tonight and for Ken and Liz to ponder is, has there ever, under a modern American city, been a magnitude 7.2 to 7.3 quake? Think about that. In the meantime, we are looking south from the top of the Salesforce Tower cam, where right now it's still warm in the East Bay, but cool along the shoreline, 64 in San Francisco. Overnight lows tonight will be in the mid-40s in Santa Rosa, Napa, 49 degrees, Fairfield at 49. Get some low clouds along the shoreline tonight, but generally they will be held at bay or at shore by the high pressure that's off the Pacific Northwest. That low has been spinning over San Diego for about a week now. And the high is going to edge closer to the Pacific Northwest. Gentle offshore flow. Numbers come up a little bit tomorrow. So Saturday is going to be the warmest day of the week. And then numbers will begin to cool. But tomorrow looks mighty nice. But with the high pressure on top, putting a lid on things, just moderate air quality tomorrow could be better. Could be worse. It'll be right in between. Forecast highs for tomorrow. It's going to be a warm one. The warmest day of the week. Temperatures will be in the 80-degree range down in the South Bay. Over in the East Bay, we have plenty of sunshine, and numbers will be in the mid-80s in the East Bay. And numbers will begin to come down on Sunday. But for tomorrow, beautiful up in the North Bay, 81 degrees up in Santa Rosa. And then by the time we get up to Ukiah, we're going to be looking at numbers in the mid-80s as well. Extended forecast, warmest day of the week Saturday. Sunday, the numbers begin to come down. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, cool change. Temps in the mid-70s before we rebound on Friday. So the question is, could the Hayward Fault, has there ever been a magnitude 7.2 to 7.3 in a modern American city, the likes of which the Hayward Fault could trigger? Ken, Liz?
What about 06, San Francisco? And then there was the quake in Alaska.
The quake in Alaska. That is absolutely true. I should have said, Mr. Best, you had a very clever, the continental U.S. The answer is this.
We're talking about a magnitude 7.2 to a 7.3, and that's really large. We really haven't had an earthquake of that size in a modern American city.
The key question, the key part being modern American city, 1906, was bigger.
Our news continues tonight at 10 o'clock on KBCW 44 Cable 12 and at 11 on KPIX 5.
And remember to select KPIX News on your Amazon Echo.
Pix Now News is sponsored by Chevron, proud to support STEM education in the Bay Area. Meet our STEM standout, Nicole Collins Puri.
TechBridge Girls is focusing on exciting, educating, and equipping girls to really see STEM as a vehicle to economic mobility and better life's chances. We're creating an environment that says, we see you, we hear you, and we understand your journey.
Chevron and KPIX 5, teaming up to support STEM education in the Bay Area.